Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Turns out you can't spell tariffs without Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Monday, the 20th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. If you are the global trade policy type, I will tell you what, this is the week for you. And I'm being totally serious here, too. This morning, the U.S. Trade Representative opened six days of public hearings into President Trump's proposal to tax another $200 billion worth of Chinese imports. Tariffs is another word you could use there. 25% is the main number to know. These hearings, required by the aforementioned Section 301, are to let companies and trade groups affected by those tariffs weigh in. And here is one indicator about how big a deal this is. Originally, there were only supposed to be 3, not 6 days of these hearings. Nicole Vassilaris testified this morning. She's the Vice President of Government Relations at the National Marine Manufacturers Association. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
How'd your testimony go today? What'd you say?
It went well. We were talking about the impact that not only these 301 tariffs, but the entire trade situation is having on the U.S. domestic manufacturing industry.
What was the mood in the room? I mean, did you get questions, or were you just talking to a smattering of representatives of the USTR? What was going on?
I was on the third panel. It seems to be like a busy day. They're going to have 6 days of hearings. You know, the general mood and the theme was tariffs are bad for U.S. businesses, and this back and forth war with China isn't helping anyone. There are no easy substitutes, and a lot of what China makes is critically important to what we make here in the U.S. And that was really not only the message that we carried, but several other companies and associations were saying as well.
Let's get to the meat of this then for you and the National Marine Manufacturers Association. Why are these tariffs, would-be tariffs rather, a problem for you?
So for our industry, we are an American-made industry. 95% of boats that are sold in the U.S. are made here in the U.S. But just like many other companies and industries out there, we have global supply chains. And so these 301 tariffs on now $250 billion worth of goods impact those supply chains. Everything from the fiberglass that makes the actual boat to the trailer that transports these boats to the water every year, those have a real impact on the cost to our manufacturers and their cost of doing business.
Which will then, because business is business, be passed on to consumers, yeah?
You know, all of our manufacturers are going to have to make those decisions. That's the last thing anybody wants to do. Domestic sales are really strong right now, which is promising. But there are small margins, and not all of these costs are going to be able to be absorbed.
So we counted. There are 48 products in the list of stuff that you want excluded from the final tariff determination. What happens to boat manufacturers in this economy writ large if this goes on?
Well, our message to the administration right now is let's bring everybody to the table and make a deal. If that's what the president wants to do, you've caught everybody's attention, but we need to make a deal and we need to make it quickly because tariffs are already in place. We're seeing increased costs and the back and forth isn't helping anyone.
Take me back to the room. Did anybody say, yes, we love these tariffs, please do more?
Not when I was there. And we understand that there may be some industries that are looking for some protection, but you don't go about that through tariffs. That's not really addressing the meat of the problem. It's just adding an additional cost for U.S. businesses.
Nicole Vassilaris, she's the Senior Vice President of Government Relations at the National Marine Manufacturers Association, testified today to the USTR. Ms. Vassilaris, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Everybody, and I do mean everybody, wants to have their say at these hearings. 350 people are scheduled to testify in all, from fashion and chemicals to bicycles, also technology. Naomi Wilson's up tomorrow. She's the China and Greater Asia Director for the Information Technology Industry Council. And I asked her what message she wants the government to hear.
We very much appreciate the administration taking these issues seriously. I was particularly impressed by USTR's Section 301 report on all of the policies, practices, and regulations that China has created over the past years that lead to conditions that impede market access. However, we think that tariffs are the wrong answer to the right question.
Well, let me channel the president of the United States insofar as it is possible to do that. He will say and has said China's been robbing us blind for years on this and nothing has worked so far. So I'm going to hit him. What do you say to that?
I think he's right that nothing has worked in a concerted way. And we definitely need a change in tactics. We keep hearing the administration proclaim that short-term pain is going to lead towards long-term benefits. However, we don't have any facts to support that argument. And at this point in time, we're actually seeing the opposite in terms of increased consumer prices, jobs potentially moving abroad, and manufacturing in the United States being hurt.
Of all the industries in the United States that are or say they are being hurt by these tariffs, and I'm thinking now agriculture and steel users, not steel makers, but steel users, it seems to me that tech is doing pretty well. What are you guys complaining about?
So people assume that we have giant tech companies that are part of our membership and that they can absorb the cost. However, that's a gross oversimplification of the global supply chain. So you take a seemingly innocuous tariff code and you extrapolate that to the effect on consumers, and you end up with price increases for everyday electronics, such as cell phones, computers, televisions, etc.
I don't want to be a downer here, but what happens if, if your testimony tomorrow is not persuasive and these 25 or so percent tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports does go into effect? Because it sure looks like nobody's backing down.
I think we will see ramifications for years to come. We have not seen a tariffs list this expansive implemented previously. And so we have to think through exactly what solution we are proposing and whether it moves us in the right direction or is in effect harmful not only to our companies, but to average Americans.
Naomi Wilson, she is the Director for China and Greater Asia at the Information Technology Industry Council, testifying tomorrow on what are officially known as the Section 301 tariffs being proposed by the Trump administration. Ms. Wilson, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All to say here, by the way, just on that topic of nobody backing down, that late this afternoon, Reuters reported that in an interview with them, the president had said that he has got no time frame for ending the trade war with China. On Wall Street this Monday, did all right. You know, truth be told, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. It's clearly going to be a while before we know what fate and the markets have in store for Tesla and its CEO, Elon Musk. The SEC is investigating Musk's tweet about taking the company private and funding being secured at $420 a share. The company's board is investigating, and Wall Street analysts, whose job it is to figure out what Tesla is really worth, are weighing in as well. JP Morgan Chase said this morning, it's not sure a deal to take the company private is ever going to happen, and it lowered its target price on Tesla stock from $308 a share, almost exactly where it closed today, to $195 a pop. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has more now on target prices and analysts in today's Wall Street economy.
You're an investor. You're trying to figure out whether to buy or sell a certain stock. So you look at its target price. Really, that's just a prediction by a stock analyst. Karen Petru is managing partner at Federal Financial Analytics.
This is where I think the stock is going to be, say, by the end of the quarter, based on everything I know now, everything I see ahead.
If an analyst thinks a stock will hit $100, but right now it's sitting at 50, that's a cue to buy. Analysts predict how high or low a stock is going to go by doing some good old-fashioned number crunching. Saule Amarova at Cornell says they start with the basics, like poring over a company's financial statements.
what kind of cash flows the company is generating, what kind of business strategy it has, if the market share is stable, if it's growing.
Analysts also consider the health of the industry and macroeconomic factors like interest rates. And then they have conversations with investors. Truth is, there is no exact formula. Jeff Mills is an investment strategist at PNC.
Not every analyst is going to come to the same conclusion about a particular stock, and that's why some people buy shares and some people sell shares of the same security.
Mills says price targets can move markets, especially if they come from an analyst with a good track record. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
It is today in this economy, as one might assume it would be given the housing crash of a decade ago, somewhat more difficult to get a mortgage than it used to be. But a lot of people, being people, still want to buy houses. So what do you do? Well, you think rent to own. As part of our project on the 10 years since the financial crisis, which we call Divided Decade, Marketplace's Amy Scott looks at rent to own, helping to stabilize a Cleveland neighborhood one house at a time.
Driving around Slavic Village in Cleveland, you can still see the scars of the foreclosure crisis. Vacant houses with sagging porches and broken windows, empty lots where homes once stood, and a still-thriving demolition business. Tony Brancatelli represents Slavic Village on the Cleveland City Council. He says the neighborhood, named for its historic population of Central European immigrants, became a target for subprime and predatory loans in the 1990s and 2000s. And when those loans went bad...
The zip code 44105 in 2007 had the highest foreclosure rate in the entire United States. We were losing about two houses a day to foreclosure.
Today, there's another site popping up, brand new houses with white trim and wood porches, all built by the nonprofit developer CHN Housing Partners. I find Charles Collier listening to music on his front porch, enjoying a breezy afternoon. He and his wife moved in earlier this year.
Well, my wife always wanted a brand new house, so here it is.
The couple rent the three-bedroom house from CHN for $640 a month. That's low for the area. After 15 years, they'll have an option to buy it.
You know, you got 15 years to have the house, to get it to kind of the way you want it, make sure everything's good. So, yeah, as long as the Lord let me stay, I'm going to be right here.
Collier's is one of nine CHN houses on a block once dotted with abandoned homes. In all, 37 are planned for the compact neighborhood. Councilman Brancatelli says that can make a big difference.
It brings people to a neighborhood, sending their kids to local schools, spending at the local restaurants, and being part of the community.
CHN is working with cities like Detroit and Baltimore on similar programs. Formerly called Cleveland Housing Network, the group has been around since 1981. Assistant Director Kate Monter-Durbin says back then, as now, banks weren't lending to people with low incomes.
So we were really created to try to figure out how can home ownership be successful and affordable for low-income families.
Then in 1987, Congress launched the Low Income Housing Tax Credit to encourage developers to build affordable rental housing. So CHN started a lease purchase program. Properties built or rehabbed using the credit have to remain rental housing for 15 years. In year 16, CHN offers renters the option to buy at well below market rates. And buyers get up to $10,000 knocked off the price for the rent they've paid.
What's really different about our model is that we're able to sell the homes at a very low amount.
Around $25,000 or less. The median sale price in the Slavic Village area on Realtor.com is about $43,000. To be eligible, applicants have to earn enough to afford the rent but still qualify as low income. Along the way, CHN offers financial counseling to help people improve their credit scores, settle old debts, and start saving. When it's time to buy, they should be in good shape to apply for a traditional mortgage or get a loan from CHN. Karina Clay and Curtis Wright are just months away from paying off their loan. At ages 38 and 45, they'll own this house in Slavic Village outright.
And it's a nice property. You know, it's a four-bedroom.
Four bedrooms, two four-baths.
Two four-baths.
Finished basement.
Finished basement.
And a quarter of an acre backyard.
When they moved in 5 years ago, Clay says the house had only a few years left of the required 15-year rental period.
Then by the time it was up for sale, we was able to buy it. I knew I had longevity on my job. I had decent credit. And we just started from there.
She's a security supervisor at a casino. Wright does maintenance for the city. The house is on a dead-end street surrounded by woods. There's a trampoline out back for their six kids. Wright says it's a big step up from the public housing project they left behind, where he constantly worried about his kids' safety.
I'm going to say I was stressed out down there. I had to get on anxiety pills.
And now?
Oh, tip-top shape. Can't tell? Love it. Love it, man. I can't believe it.
Over 30 years, 85 to 90% of CHN's renters have become homeowners. More than 1,100 families so far. In Cleveland, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I've realized in hindsight that I was scared to play the role.
Actress, producer, and director Regina King on her latest Emmy-nominated part. But first, let's do the numbers. All right, so here you go. On a Monday in late August, mid-August? I don't know. Where are we? Dow Industrial is up 89 points today, 0.3%, 25,758. NASDAQ picked up just 4 points, finished at 7,821. S&P 500 found 6 points, just lying around, 0.2%, 28.57 there. The iPhone X, it turns out, is just too popular. That, according to New Street Research, so popular that not enough people are going to buy the next generation iPhones, whenever they came out. And so the firm downgraded Apple stock. Apple lost 0.9% today. ConocoPhillips picked up 1% after it announced it settled with Venezuela's state-run oil company to recover about $2 billion. A dispute arose after Venezuela nationalized two oil projects. Nike jogged ahead 3% after Piper Jaffray and Susquehanna raised their ratings on that stock. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year Tino down to 2.81%. You're listening to Marketplace. Not everybody gets a chance to learn about the economy in school. Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that's smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy, and that is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors, and thanks. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Fizzy water is in the news today. $3.2 billion worth of fizzy water, to be precise. Pepsi announced this morning it's buying SodaStream, the Israeli company that makes those make-your-own carbonated water machines that live on your countertop someplace, or maybe sometimes back in a cabinet somewhere. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on what Pepsi sees in the DIY soda market.
SodaStream's been doing home carbonation since 1903. It's sold pretty well overseas, but it never did that well here in the States. So about 5 years ago, SodaStream launched a campaign to reinvent itself.
Changing the world, one sip at a time.
Sorry, Coke and Pepsi.
Oh yeah, she done it. SodaStream.
That ad featuring Scarlett Johansson was supposed to run during the Super Bowl. It got rejected for calling out Coke and Pepsi directly. But the idea was simple. We don't make soda, we make sparkling water. It's healthier. David Hinkes at Technomic says the strategy didn't catch on at first, but sales of sparkling water have been soaring lately.
The consumer finally caught up to where SodaStream had previously gone.
That consumer demand has almost quadrupled SodaStream's share price. Pepsi's not alone in trying to get into the homemade beverage business. Back in 2014, Coca-Cola bought a 10% stake in Green Mountain Coffee. Alexander Esposito at Euromonitor International says people have been speculating that Pepsi would buy SodaStream for a while now.
I see this as Pepsi recognizing that sparkling water is one of those categories that is the future.
But it's not just sparkling water. Tom Perko at Bevmar Consulting says this acquisition could give Pepsi the ability to allow consumers to make their own cola at home. So whether they buy it or use a soda stream, it brings them closer to the Pepsi brand. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The Emmys are the next show up in the American Artistic Awards cycle. The primetime Emmys broadcast is a month from now, the 17th of September. Regina King, you've seen her in Southland and American Crime Story, to name just a couple. She's into producing and directing as well. Anyway, she is nominated in the acting category for the fourth consecutive year. She's won twice, I ought to say. But this year is her first as a lead actress in Venus Hood's Netflix drama 7 Seconds. She plays Latrice Butler, an African-American woman whose son is killed in a hit-and-run with a white police officer. Regina King, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start, obviously, with the Emmy nomination you got for 7 Seconds and the role and our times, I guess. What did it mean to you to play this woman?
Oh, well, first of all, Kai, I have to tell you, I've realized in hindsight that I was scared to play the role.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, I've played a mother before several times, but Vina was very adamant on me playing Latrice. She felt like I was the one for it.
And I guess she gets to decide, right?
Yeah, she does. It is her. She created it. It's her piece of art. Yeah. And she said that's who she saw as Latrice. And so I took a deep breath and, you know, got into it.
Do you think a show like this, or I guess a project like that, could exist on network television today? Yeah, right?
Well, yeah, it's a long... And the reason why it's... I don't want to just say no, it can't. Because, you know, American Crime was on ABC,
sure.
and that was a huge leap for ABC to take. So, sure, there's a space if the network wants to take that risk. I don't know that all networks would allow themselves to be as gritty. You know, that's kind of the beauty of cable and streaming. Anyway, it feels more closer to real life.
True confession time. We originally had you scheduled to come on during pilot season because you were directing a pilot about New York City cops, right? The Finest, isn't that what it's called? Yeah, didn't get picked up for a series, and I'm sure there's a whole set of regrets you have about that. But one of the things that occurred to us as I was getting ready for that interview was the diversity issue in pilot directing and pilot production as it's happening in Hollywood today. And I wonder, and I don't want to, I mean, I'm sure you get this question all the time, right? Because you're in front of the camera, you're behind the camera, you're an African-American woman, and you've got, I mean, you're like a made woman here, right? You're doing stuff that counts. And I guess the question is, does it feel different now?
In a lot of ways, Kai, I do feel like I feel like I'm just getting started, you know? And I guess because I'm in a position where I can be part of the conception. So I guess it's a more powerful position, if you will. I'm excited about the future. While it was very disappointing that New York's Finest did not get picked up, it did not deter me from developing other projects. And they are they have been received very well. And when you hear me pausing, because I've tried to be very careful about
it.
Speaking of something too much, and then you have to have the conversation, well, it didn't get picked up. You know, it's really disappointing because all of the energy you do put into it is so much more than when I'm just approaching it as an actor only. It's a lot more brain power.
That's interesting, because I imagine, well, I mean, come on, a woman at your level, I imagine the acting part of it takes a whole lot of brain power too, right? I mean, prepping for 7 Seconds and Latrice Butler, you spent a time with a woman who's lost her son. I mean, all of that.
Yes, absolutely. But I will say, as a producer director, you have so many other responsibilities. You know, to have to make that phone call to these wonderful actresses and the amazing crew that, you know, put their blood, sweat into something that you brought to them, that's tough. And as an actor, you don't necessarily have to make that phone call. You know, you...
Right. You're on the receiving end, but it's still probably not as hard.
Yeah. So you're mourning with other people.
Yeah.
It's just a bigger responsibility, I think.
Yeah. Regina King, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, a couple of more things from that interview the president gave to Reuters. He said, and these are quotes, that he is not thrilled with Fed Chairman Jay Powell for raising interest rates and that he, the president that is, should be given some help by the Fed. It's not really within recent norms, back, say, 25 years, for presidents to weigh in directly on what the Fed does. But either way, it's probably not going to work. Here is Chair Powell answering my question about exactly that when we sat down in his office at the Fed building in Washington like a month, month and a half ago.
We do our work in a strictly non-political way based on detailed analysis, which we put on the record transparently. And we don't consider political consideration. We don't take political considerations into account.
Not being above a bit of shameless self-promotion, here's the plug. You can hear that whole interview we did with Chairman Powell at marketplace.org. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrial's up 89 today, 0.3%. NASDAQ picked up just 4 points. The S&P 500, 6 points to the good 0.2%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Phoebe Unterman. Our special projects desk includes Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. Caitlin Esch is the producer on our wealth and poverty desk. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.